Welcome to the Lancet Respiratory Medicine Podcast. I'm Aaron Van Dorn, speaking to you from the Lancet's New York office. I recently spoke with Fabian Maldonado, an associate professor of medicine and thoracic surgery and mechanical engineering at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, about the effectiveness of using pleural manometry to monitor pleural pressure during thoracentesis procedures. Dr. Maldonado, thoracentesis is a common procedure in clinical practice. Could you tell us a little about the purpose of the procedure and the type of patients it tends to be performed in and possible complications associated with it?
Sure. So thoracentesis is actually probably the most commonly performed procedure by pulmonologists like myself, and it consists of draining extra fluid that accumulates between the lung and the chest wall in the so-called pleural cavity. And we see this type of issues in a variety of medical conditions, from congestive heart failure to malignant pleural effusions to pleural space infections. And they need to be drained for a number of reasons, usually for diagnostic reasons to try to determine what is causing the accumulation of fluid to begin with, but also because it causes a lot of symptoms. So the accumulation of fluid itself results in some compression of the underlying lung, which can result in some gas exchange abnormalities. But more importantly, it causes a lot of issues in terms of respiratory mechanics. So it exerts a lot of pressure on the diaphragm, which in turn causes a lot of breathlessness, which is obviously very inconvenient for patients. So draining this fluid will allow for this diaphragm to reassume a normal shape and normal motion function and relieve the breathlessness and allow at the same time for analysis to be done on the pleural fluid, which may in turn help us determine what the cause of the effusion is. Complications are rare. Like I said, it's a very commonly performed procedure. There's really two major types of complications. Complications due to the entry of the needle in the intercostal space, which may very rarely but sometimes very dramatically lacerate intercostal arteries, resulting in often potentially very significant complications such as bleeding in the pleural space. Fortunately, these complications are very rare, and the use of ultrasound has really mitigated this type of issues. But the other type of complication we see are related to the fact that occasionally, as we drain the fluid and expect the lung to re-expand and reoccupy that volume that is being drained, that lung cannot re-expand. We call this an unexpendable lung. And so trying to remove more fluid beyond the point of maximal re-expansion of the lung will result in some vacuum in the chest. The pressures drop and symptoms like pain, and if it continues, pneumothorax, which is some air that gets sucked in the pleural space, or even a dramatic complication called re-expansion pulmonary edema. All three complications may occur. Pain, pneumothorax, so-called exvacual, because it's related to a vacuum, and re-expansion pulmonary edema. The first type of complication, the pain, is quite common. A lot of people have some degree of pain at the end of the procedure, which can be quite sharp and last for 30 minutes to 45 minutes, so we'd like to avoid that. Thankfully, the other two are relatively rare, and all three complications are presumably secondary to a drop in pleural pressures. And so for many years now, some people have strongly advocated for monitoring pleural pressures during the procedure so that we can monitor these pressures and don't drop below a certain threshold that has been arbitrarily defined at a certain point. And this is called pleural manometry, which is the topic of the study that we perform.
You and your colleagues contributed to the study of pleural manometry in thoracentesis. Could you please explain the rationale behind the study and what the findings were?
Yes, and so the primary aim of the study was to try to determine whether using pleural manometry during thoracentesis improves patient outcome. Pleural manometry has been strongly advocated primarily by U.S.-based pleural experts, a lot of whom recommend to use monitoring of pleural pressures during any therapeutic thoracentesis, and to monitor specifically this drop in pleural pressure that may herald complications such as pain, pneumothorax, and re-extension pulmonary edema. In the British Thoracic Society guidelines, manometry is not recommended for lack of evidence, and so it has this little bit of a discordance between recommendations on both sides of the Atlantic. So what we decided to do based on a prior retrospective study where we looked at the endpoint of chest discomfort after thoracentesis, we decided, which by the way did not really show any meaningful impact of manometry with all the caveats of retrospective observational studies, we decided to design these randomized controlled trials of pleural manometry and randomize patients in two groups. In the first group, we would drain the fluid, as we typically do without the help of manometry, and stop the procedure when the patient starts developing some chest discomfort or any other symptoms such as intractable cough or when the fluid is completely drained. And in the other group, patients would have, in addition to these stopping signals, would have pleural anometry as a potential indicator to stop the procedure. So that we measure the pressure during the procedure, and if that pressure drops below a certain threshold, we would stop the procedure, assuming that pressures are reaching a dangerous point at which we may expect complications. So we randomized a total of 128 patients in both groups, and our endpoint for this study was the amount of chest discomfort at the end of the procedure based on a visual analog scale and validated outcome measures. And we think that's an important endpoint to look at because it's a patient's important endpoint. Obviously, a lot of patients have a lot of pain at the end of the procedure, which we'd like to avoid. But also, it's a very practical endpoint because obviously, it's a continuous endpoint, which gives us a lot of power in terms of statistical analysis. But also, it's difficult to look at the other endpoints of pneumothorax and re-expansion pulmonary edema because they're so rare events. And so in order to power a study that would look at these specific complications, we would have to have thousands of patients. So that was the rationale for this more pragmatic study in a way. And what we found in this study is that really the use of routine pleural manometry in thoracentesis did not improve patient outcomes on our primary endpoint, but also on all secondary endpoints. The only difference, interestingly, is that patients in whom we used pleural manometry had less pneumothorax ex vacuo than patients in the control group, which you could argue, well, here's a complication, quote unquote, of thoracentesis that was mitigated by the use of pleural manometry. Our feeling, though, on all these cases that we carefully reviewed is that these were ex vacuo pneumothorax phenomena, which are not really a complication per se, but rather an indication that we've drained too much fluid. So the way the pneumothorax happens in a pneumothorax ex vacuo situation is that the pressure is so low in the pleural space that some air gets entrained in the pleural space to re-equilibrate the pressures. So it's not really a complication, but rather an indication that perhaps we've drained a little too much fluid. So the bottom line is that while as currently performed pleural manometry does not appear to improve patient outcomes, it is possible that further developments in technique and maybe continuous monitoring will allow us to mitigate some of these complications.
What are the broader clinical implications of the findings, and are there any gaps in research that need to be filled?
Yeah, so I think the main message here is that based on the best evidence that we have now, we cannot continue to recommend routine pleural manometry for therapeutic thoracentesis. And that means that in the next iteration of US or UK-based guidelines, routine manometry should not be recommended. That does not mean that pleural manometry is useless. I think it's still a very useful tool as an adjunct piece of information to determine whether lungs are expandable or not. I think the gaps in knowledge would pertain to the use of continuous monitoring of pleural pressures. So these are technical limitations that need to be addressed by advances in biomechanical engineering, where by measuring pressures continuously throughout the procedure, we may be able to detect an inflection point in the pleural volume curve that would determine when best to stop the procedure. One of the limitations of the current technique for pleural manometry is that we have to stop draining and measure the pressure very intermittently so that we lose a lot of time during which the pressures are not being monitored. There's a lot of blind time during which we don't really know what the pleural pressures are doing. And so continuous pleural manometry may be a very useful tool in the future, and there's an upcoming product that will answer this need. The other very important aspect of pleural manometry that needs to be sorted out is its role in predicting the efficacy of a treatment for recurrent pleural effusions called pleurodesis, which consists essentially of getting the lung to stick to the chest wall by a variety of mechanical or chemical maneuvers. Typically, talc is being injected in the pleural space to create some irritation and get the lung to stick to the chest wall. Well, this implies that the lung does not have too much of a tendency to recoil from the chest wall. And so being able to measure the pressure during an initial thoracentesis may give us insight into the physiology of the pleural effusion and whether the pleurodesis, if that's the option decided by physicians and patients, is likely to work or not. And there's a number of trials that are now being developed to look at this. So there's still a potential role for pleural manometry, but I think what the central message of our study is that, you know, there's really no ground to advocate routine manometry during all therapeutic sources.
Dr. Maldonado, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you very much.